Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of What the Hell. And you have to ask, what the hell is going on in the Amazon rainforest? There's a terrible fire down there. We're hearing so many horror stories about it. So we wanted to talk about it, and we brought on some very special guests to have that conversation. Let's meet them.
My name is Atossa Soltani. I'm the founder and board president of Amazon Watch.
My name is Jack Eight. I'm the founder of Wilder Utopia. It's my website, and I'm a writer with that and an urban planner, and I'm also a co-founder of SoCal 350 Climate Action.
I'm Karen North. I'm a professor of digital social media at USC's Annenberg School.
We want to talk about the fires in the Amazon rainforest, and since you're with Amazon Watch, why don't you get us started with sort of an explanation of how large this forest is and how much of that forest is consumed by fire right now?
So the Amazon basin is the world's largest tropical rainforest. It's larger than continental United States, and it includes 9 countries. And the rate of deforestation has been fluctuating between something like 3 to 7 football fields per minute. And we've lost already 20% of the Amazon is completely destroyed. Another 20% is severely degraded. Now, the Amazon is also plays an important ecological function. People say it's the lungs of the world, indigenous peoples, and I believe this too, that it's the heart of the planet. And the reason for that is that every tree in the Amazon lifts up 1,000 liters of water a day into the atmosphere. And all that moisture and all of that vapor together form a flying river that's actually larger than the Amazon River every day. And that conveyor is basically bringing rain to South America. 95% of the rain in South America comes from the Amazon. But also that rain is a conveyor that is literally the engine of the global weather system. It is a conveyor that brings rain to the entire planet. And so it's the global rain machine. And we are seeing that the trees are key to that circulation. So if we've lost 20% and another 20% is heavily degraded, we're seeing a tipping point of ecological unraveling that would affect the water cycle even here in California.
That sounds pretty scary. But fires happen.
The fires happen every year because farmers set fires to their lands to be able to expand their cattle and soybean production and other farming. But this year, the fires were 84% higher. They also reached into Bolivia and created wildfires in the dry tropical forest zone that's already consumed 1 million hectares, and that's not in the news. And there are people that live there. There are 3,500 indigenous territories have been suffering fires, and that's impacting biodiversity, that's impacting people and communities that are being affected by that fire.
It's affecting animals, because as you and I have talked about before, larger animals can run, they can kind of get away. They don't know what fire is, but they can get away if they fear danger. But the reptiles, the snakes, the amphibians.
And all of the life, the Amazon contains, something like 10% of all species on Earth. And if you take one football field size of the Amazon rainforest, there are more species of trees, more types of different kinds of trees in that one football field than in all of the U.S. and Canada combined. Same with butterflies, same with hummingbirds, same with reptiles.
What kind of endangered species are in the Amazon?
All kinds. Most of the wild cats are endangered. The thing about the Amazon is that the diversity is in that place only. So if you destroy a hectare of rainforest, you will have destroyed orchids, lizards, amphibians that only live in that region and nowhere else.
And some people may be asking, what's a hectare?
A hectare is 2.5 acres. And so, basically in a football field, a hectare is like the size of a football field. And we have we've only cataloged 5% of all the plant species in the Amazon. So we're burning the library. And also, if you look at the modern pharmaceuticals, 25% of all modern pharmaceuticals come from tropical rainforest. In those hectares of forest that were destroyed, acres of forest were going up in flames. There's right now 74,000 fires have been burning this fire season. 10,000 of them are active today. And, we need to fight the fires. We need to change the policies that are developing the deforestation. But we are basically burning the future of the heart. You could say that the Amazon is a vital organ of our planetary biosphere.
But then we end up with these fires in Southern California, which is, you know, affecting the forests, which are the vital organs of, say, Los Angeles.
Right.
And so we have these issues as well, just on a much smaller scale.
That's right. And, you know, the climate is the big emergency. We do need to declare climate emergency. We need to rise to this moment in time and say, okay, how are we going to come together to focus our livelihoods, our aspirations as a society about being taking care of the earth and being good stewards and being good ancestors to future generations.
Jack, you know, your organization, 350 Climate Action.
Yeah, SoCal 350.
SoCal 350. And it's 350 because?
Well, 350 parts per million of carbon is the stable, that will allow us in the atmosphere to have a stable atmosphere in terms of a stable climate. Right now, we're at 410. Meaning we're spiraling out of control with carbon levels, which is effectively throwing a blanket over the atmosphere.
When you talk about the 350, you're talking about locally?
This is
worldwide.
Global.
Okay.
And when you throw that blanket, effectively we're trapping the heat so it can't dissipate, and it increases temperatures. Now when that increases temperatures overall, and right now in the last 20 years, we keep getting hotter and hotter and hotter and breaking more and more records. This year, 2019, we've been breaking all sorts of temperature records. But it doesn't translate to just, it manifests in many different ways, meaning some areas the rain increases massively, others it becomes drought. And that can change. Global agriculture is dependent upon a regular climate. The Farmer's Almanac that I used to read as a kid.
I read it too, by the way.
It tells you when to plant.
I wanted to know when it was going to snow.
Well, and that was a big thing for me. And now the Farmer's Almanac probably has a difficult job. And what's happening with the melting of the glaciers, the melting of the Arctic ice, and the release of massive amount of methane because of that. And we're seeing it happen this year. Greenland has had an incredible melt because of a heat wave that moved over from Western Europe and just broke the whole systems of ice that have been there for years and years. And we're facing an ice-free Arctic. It hasn't happened in millions, I think 6 million years. So what happens with no ice in the Arctic? That is our global air conditioner. And we're faced with spiraling out of control. The methane levels, methane is extremely active greenhouse gas, meaning it puts that blanket down 84 times more than burning oil.
But, you know, it's interesting because what we used to talk about years ago was burning a hole in the ozone.
Right.
That's what we used to talk about. And that was going to be the end of all awful things, right? That's kind of gone away somewhere because I don't hear people talking about the ozone, do I?
Right. And the reason is because people took action. They forced corporations to change their way of doing business. And suddenly we saw a healing of the planetary systems in that case. We still have the chance to do that. And unfortunately, the window of time is escaping for us to get off of the extreme burning of fossil fuels, the agriculture systems, and the methane that's released. We still can make a difference to mitigate what's happening with this climate change. But unfortunately, we're going in the absolute wrong direction.
Well, we hear this number 12 years,
that right.
If we don't do something in 12 years, something's going to happen. Now, I hearken back to the millennium, where we went from 1999 to 2000, and everybody thought we're all going to die. And so what's with 12 years?
12 years is extremely conservative, and I would say we need to have action.
What do you mean extremely conservative? Somebody explain that to me, because 12 years,
in 12 years,
12 years, 12 years is
if we wait
a long
for 12 time, years to take action, it'll be all over.
Basically,
we have 1.5 years.
12 years really is the limit that the UN IPCC report said is what we have to basically the carbon that's being emitted now needs to basically be frozen, and we now need to draw down the carbon that's in the atmosphere, bring it back down to levels. Otherwise, what's called a positive feedback loop, which is temperature getting hotter, more ice melting, temperature getting hotter, climate getting more chaotic, we'll see basically acidification of the ocean. We see the collapse of the rainforest. We'll see large-scale fires. We'll see the destruction of agricultural systems.
We're already seeing large-scale fires.
And so, yeah, so we're basically, that's part of that feedback loop. So what we're saying is that we really need to bring down the carbon emissions. We need to replant forests. We need to do almost a war-scale effort to phase out fossil fuels, push for renewable energy.
That's kind of happening, isn't it? Because the electric cars,
not
the
fast effort enough. In the U.S., we're creating the largest carbon bomb on the planet. In the U.S.,
carbon bomb.
In other words, the amount of money that's going in now between subsidies and investments in fossil fuel infrastructure will increase by many folds. So basically, if you look at all of the oil and gas production today, under the Paris Agreement, to get to 2 degrees, we have to leave in the ground 80% of all the fossil fuels. Instead, U.S. is poised to become a bigger producer than Saudi Arabia. The tar sands are being promoted. There's massive investments, hundreds of billions of dollars a year, over $300 billion a year by industry in expanding pipelines and building natural gas, fracking, to make the U.S. and Canada and other northern countries into becoming big producers of fossil fuels. And that's going the wrong direction. That's why there's a fight to, you know, leave fossil fuels on the ground, to end subsidies for pipelines, to ask banks and insurance companies to stop financing and insuring fossil fuel infrastructure. We're not saying we can't use now what we are using. We're saying we got to stop growing. We got to stop.
But you would run into a lot of opposition from those people that
you
want
to do
that.
Yeah, but it's life or death on the planet. It's like the future of our children and their children. And so, but the thing is that we do have the technology. And in fact, we know green jobs are more, basically you can get, you know, more jobs from the green economy, from energy efficiency, from renewables, from replanting, from doing agriculture, organic farming. All of the things that we know we need, we know we can do it, and we can actually have a better economy. We can have a more resilient, healthy, you know, less medical bills, you know, cleaner air, cleaner water. What's wrong with having a better quality of life instead of just looking at our current
system? Well, no, I think that's part of the conversation. I think that's why we have the conversation, is to understand what the options are. One of the things that helps in that conversation, whichever way you fall on it, is a big star like Leonardo DiCaprio putting out money to try to help things out with some of his friends. J-Lo. These sort of celebrity things can make a difference, but
absolutely.
The reason I've asked Karen North to be here is because Karen is a professor of social media at USC's Annenberg School. But this whole debate has been fueled on social media. It's been the web, the World Wide Web, that has carried this debate around the world.
Yeah, I mean, people didn't know about this from traditional news. It bubbled up in a way that was very organic and that people really cared. It touched people personally. And, you know, the question now is, how can digital media or social media help tell people not just what's happening or that it's catastrophic, but what can be done about it? And, I mean, research actually shows us that when people think something is catastrophic, they sometimes don't act. It's when people think that there's a problem that can be helped that people will jump in and help. So, you know, I started thinking about some of the things that have been said here today and wonder what can be said and how do we say it so that people know there's a solution. People just need to do these things to find that solution.
Well, yeah. The web certainly has been a very important thing. You know, we used to, and what we still do, look at television as a sort of a community experience. You could have one person in five apartments and five people are watching television. They're not together, but they are with us, right? So the web brings in yet another dimension of that, where you can be at home watching your phone, watching your computer, and you're getting all this information thrown at you. Some is easy to buy, some's impossible to buy. But this whole discussion about what's going on in the Amazon has people talking.
And, you know, the beauty of social media versus other more traditional media is that when those people are alone in their houses and apartments, they feel personally connected to the stories because they feel like they're there with the person who's got the phone that's recording their story or their experience. And that's when there's an actual way to affect people emotionally and to make people really compelled to join in an effort.
And then when you have celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio.
So people like Leonardo, celebrities in general who are successful today are good at making us feel like we have a personal connection to them. And therefore, when they say, join me, I care, I'm one of you, you're one of my people, let's all do it together, then people like Leonardo DiCaprio can have a remarkable impact, more so than in the past when we only had traditional media.
You guys would agree with that.
Yeah, but the reality is regular people also are connected with what's going on, and there's more people who support climate action that we're talking about. That I mean, right now our government is a representative democracy, but it is not representing what the people really want.
Well, some of the people really want, because to be fair, there are other people who don't take the same position, right?
Well,
not everybody's on the same song sheet on everything.
No, definitely not. No. But in terms of how to protect our environment and I think that there's the government supports the money entities, you know, and there's too much money in politics, and it's so therefore our politicians are responding to the major corporations. You know, it was brought up about the tar sands in Alberta. I mean, it's a project to take the area the size of Great Britain up in Canada and scrape off the forest there, the boreal forest that has been there forever, and the indigenous people living upon there are relocated, scrape out the sand, heat it at extreme temperatures to get out this tar, this gunk that they would add a bunch of chemicals and process it properly and put it in a pipeline and move it all the way across Canada through the United States all the way to Texas to process it in the Keystone XL pipeline and other pipelines. Something that makes no sense to just your average person, but these are what corporations are saying is the next step, because they feel like they can do it. We're addicted to fossil fuels, and right now we have a president who says, "Yeah, that's a great plan." Whereas if you ask regular people if that makes sense, if they know about it, that's the problem. They don't know about it.
But that addiction to fossil fuels is certainly decreasing.
Yes.
Because we're seeing more and more of these electric cars and hybrids and everything else.
Because it's out there.
We're still using upwards of 100 million barrels a day of oil. And the industry's trying to figure out how to keep that growing by 3-5% a year. It's basically trying to resist change. I think part of the problem here is that we have to organize and do what is good for future generations to take the long game. Politicians are in office for 3-4 years. They're only thinking about votes and fundraising for the next cycle, and the corporations are thinking about their next quarterly earnings. We're not taking the long game. Native Americans are telling us, you know, they're looking at 7 generations. What is the impact of what I do on 7 generations down the line? And that is being good ancestors. Our aspirations in society have become too short-term and myopic. That's why people don't agree. If you get them to agree about what kind of life they want for the future of their children and their grandchildren, they generally agree. And the questions that I think coming up are that the goals of the economic system, this economic system that's basically focusing on jobs, growth, and this such so-called development is actually, maybe they're the wrong goals. You know, maybe we're chasing the wrong goals. Maybe our goals should be a society that's about healthy communities, healthy ecosystems.
Isn't that happening in a way? I mean, don't we see more vegan lifestyle? Don't we see more solar panels and low-flow water and all that kind of thing that people are changing?
Change is happening. And my prayer and my hope and the work that I do every day is to help people see that they're part of this huge transformation, that we're really like, you know, we could be looking at our healing, caring, sharing economies that are basically helping people live happier, healthier lives, happy, healthier communities. And that if we, instead of growth, we sought the flourishing of human beings in a flourishing web of life, and we helped create conditions that are conducive to more life, then we would, you know, we need that transition, and we need everyone to play a part in it and take, whether it's, you know, educating, organizing, changing what they consume, change where their money goes, taking money out of the traditional banks and putting it in co-ops and funds that are supporting the renewable, clean energy economy, organic farming, energy efficiency, ecological education, and helping people really, you know, elect good leaders who care about the future of the planet.
Let's get a final thought. Let's start with Karen.
I think my final thought is that it's beautiful that people came together from all walks of life in the digital world to care about something that was invisible a few months ago. And I hope that we continue to sort of promote that coming together of the world community and take action to help the world.
Jack?
Yeah, I would follow that because I think we working together in communities and bonding, like in the area of Los Angeles, bringing people together, it's what we've been working really hard. We work in coalition with other groups that represent other people, particularly what we call frontline communities, vulnerable communities that are experiencing these effects, like living next to a refinery or what's happening right now with drilling in Los Angeles, you know, bringing these voices of these communities up so people understand that this is happening. And when people get educated, when people go down to the refineries and look at what's happening in Wilmington of these massive refineries and these industrial sacrifice zones, and you breathe the air and recognize these people every day have to breathe it, and they say, well, cap and trade covers it. There's a cap over how much of that pollution can be released, but that cap is for the regional area. So the people living next door are breathing something that you will get cancer, asthma, all these different diseases. When people understand that that's related to how me driving to work alone or me, you know, living this lifestyle with air conditioning, you recognize, you know what, maybe I don't need these things, and there's all kinds of options of different ways to live. And so more education and connecting the communities is the way forward to solving these problems.
Tosa, let me direct you on the final thought, because I want to find out from you, because you're really very knowledgeable about this stuff. How does what's happening in the Amazon affect us here in Los Angeles?
In many ways, we are one. The Earth is one living system. The climate is one living system. The rain in the Amazon is actually driven by trade winds and brought all the way to the rest of the world, including U.S. Southwest. In fact, the studies that I've seen say if we lost the Amazon, the hydrological system, the rain system here in California would also collapse. And so we are interdependent, and that's the muscle we need to exercise, this interdependence. And so partly learning about how the rainforest is a vital organ of a living earth of which we are a member, and that we organize the way we organize ourselves in our families, our communities, our schools, our institutions, our livelihoods, to be around that and to take action. This is an important moment for the climate and biodiversity and mass extinction and forests in the Amazon. This amazing outpouring of support from around the world needs to be generated in terms of funding, will, and policy. And this moment, we have the UN General Assembly's meeting this September in New York. World leaders are going to be there, and there's going to be discussion on how to pressure Brazil. We need to look at what's happening in the climate summit in Chile in December, where the world leaders are going to talk about
what we're doing about the climate. There were world leaders at the G7.
The world leaders
and they offered up $20 million, and the president of Brazil says no thanks.
What they're also discussed is that the beef, Brazilian beef and soy, which is mostly going to European markets, is a key commodity that Brazil wants access to those markets, and there's a trade deal. Europe said we're going to hold up that trade agreement until Brazil does the right thing, and that's a huge moment of opportunity. That same trade deal with the U.S. and Canada are coming up, so we have an opportunity to push Brazil on taking a stronger stance for the Amazon. We have to respond to the fires. We have to organize. September 5th is the International Day for the Amazon. People are organizing all over the world, rallies, vigils, fundraisers. We do, you know, when Notre Dame burned down, $2 billion was pledged. Let's try to raise the same amount of money for action, for helping these governments move beyond this model of economic development and do tree planting, do organic agriculture, do help the people in those countries live a life that's in alignment with the fruits of the forest. Instead of, you know, you can take the fruits of the forest and live well forever, or you can cut the trees and live well for a few years. And that's what the economic policy that's happening. But we as consumers can also play a role. we need to reduce our meat consumption, which is bad for our health anyway. Cattle ranching is a driving force all over the world for deforestation. And the most of the soy that goes to out of the Amazon goes to feed pigs. Most of the salmon farming goes to feed pets, for example, pet food. And so we do need to look at our consumption and be more conscientious about what we consume. So it's exercising our muscles as citizens of who we elect, as investors, where we put our money, as consumers, what we consume, and as global solidarity movements that are helping generate the political will and, you know, and taking our, you know, taking this moment and saying, okay, I'm overwhelmed. There's so much going on. I need to feel what's happening in the earth. I may cry. I may feel grief. But then through that, I'm going to make a commitment, to live differently, to organize in a way that, and, you know, to step up and be leaders. And one of the things that's most inspiring to me is the work that young people are doing. People like Greta, people, the youth strike. On September 20th, there's going to be a global youth strike. Kids are coming out of schools and saying, why should I go to school when there's no future for me? There's a collapsing biosphere in my future. So they're demanding climate action. They're suing governments and oil companies for destroying the atmosphere for future generations. And they're winning. And so, you know, supporting the young people who really have a stake in this.
And to those who say climate change is a hoax, you say what?
I say they're probably paid. They're either blind or they're paid by some political interest to lie. I mean, I think it's more than the climate change. It's also the biodiversity crisis. We have already destroyed 40% of all of the life that ever existed on the planet. And we are on scale for mass extinction by 2100. Majority of the fish in the oceans. If you take all the weight of all the animals in the world and you weigh them on one side, like all the giraffes and lions and birds, and then you take all the cats, cows, dogs, pigs, and chickens and turkeys on the other side, all the meats that we consume, all that, it's 97%. Domesticated animals versus 3% wild animals. Every one of those animals is facing extinction, is reaching endangered status, and that's only going to get worse because we're destroying their habitat. And so we need to basically come to a moment and say, you know, it's also our own future is not guaranteed. We are part of a web of life. We depend on that web of life. The earth is actually quite resilient. The earth could heal itself. The ecosystems could restore and heal themselves. And, you know, partly we just have to get in alignment or our future is not guaranteed.
Atossa mentioned tree planting, and it just so happens that we have members from an organization called Tree People, and let's meet them.
Carlos Moran, Senior Director of Programs at Tree People.
And I am Cheyenne Bizon, an EcoTour Educator at Tree People.
Tree people, and sometimes you like to call that treeple.
Treeple, if you
treeple.
Will.
I like that, actually. It sounds good. I want to ask you about the Amazon rainforest fires. I want to know what you're thinking about those. I want to know, we're so far away from Brazil and from those fires. What's your feeling about those?
Well, we are physically far away, sure, but the entire planet is one giant ecology. It's an interdependence of living systems that we have to consider. Obviously, the Amazon is a huge... it affects climate change. It affects all of us eventually, especially in a place like Los Angeles, where it's already really dry. It's really hot. We're a coastal city. We have 1,000,003 different considerations to think about with this. So what we really work towards is mobilizing people in their communities to make them feel like they have but to make a bigger impact.
Now, I know you do tours
yeah.
in different places like one of the canyons.
Yeah, Coldwater Canyon Park is where we're based.
Okay.
And then I'm also an urban planting supervisor. So that means when we're doing urban plantings, a lot of them we do in South LA and the San Fernando Valley.
Urban planting being putting in new trees?
Yes.
Okay.
New trees in areas that need canopy cover.
Canopy cover, okay. And Carlos, your position is?
I'm Senior Director of Programs, so I oversee the strategy and the program implementations for our outreach, for our mountain work restoration, for our urban forestry work. So I kind of do a lot of the behind the scenes, grant writing, fundraising,
all the important work
strategy.
Right.
Right. And then every weekend or so, I get to go out and put my hands in the soil, plant some trees, water some trees, care for them.
Were you always into trees?
Yes.
You know, as a kid?
My first
memory.
No, I
think it's a serious question.
No, it is.
Because I'm going to tell you something. I've always had great respect for trees. There was a point as a bunch of years ago, but there was a rumor that the city was going to tear down the trees in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think my immediate reaction was, I'll handcuff myself to them. You're not going to do that because I love the trees in my area. And I wouldn't really handcuff myself because I'm not one who's going to end up on the news on the other side. Mm-hmm. but I do think that a healthy respect for things that are older than us tends to be significantly important.
Yes, and we have this natural connection. We are, as Shan was saying, like we are connected to this ecosystem. So we're connected to nature, to trees themselves. We have volunteer events where we have families come together and kids, newborns to 3 years old, that are out there helping us plant trees. And it's such a lovely feeling to be able to see that, but then to pick up on that energy and that good vibrations that these youth and these kids are putting out.
But the issue of the Amazon rainforest and the fires there and the trees that are being destroyed, is this something you now talk to people about? Is this something that you educate your kids coming through on school tours and that sort of thing, Cheyenne?
Definitely. And it's also a really good thing to use to call to action. You know, a lot of people are really stressed out about it and they feel so helpless. And if we use this as an educational tool as well as a motivational tool, it works very well. And I think we're getting a lot of people behind it.
But you know, there have been fires there forever. I mean, fires are not necessarily a new phenomenon.
No, but they are very much more frequent. I think NASA reported that they have been at the highest frequency that they have been in the past near decade, I think it was. Yeah. And of course, we know that it's directly linked to deforestation, which is a direct external influence that we're having on
it's
the forest.
It's a human influence,
exactly.
Is what you're trying to say.
We're not against fires, and we're not against, there's no thing that says, oh, we shouldn't have wildfires. They're important. They're an important part of our ecosystem. They're an important part of our natural ecosystem here.
Well, it's also
in LA.
An important part of the Amazon rainforest ecosystem, right? So having a fire is not necessarily a bad thing, but the bad thing is the massive nature of this fire that can affect the air. And we talk about the Amazon rainforest as being the air conditioner to the world, the lungs of the world. The 20% of the oxygen we breathe comes from that rainforest.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me to get my head around. Like I've been to a rainforest. I've been to the Hana rainforest in Hawaii, right? And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. But you know, I can't imagine a forest so big that, you know, 20% of the oxygen that we use for our planet comes from that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about that, and that it's far away, but it's also we're so connected to it at a local level. And how did you know that we have forests here within driving distance?
No, of course we do.
Right?
Yeah,
no,
of course we do.
We have the Angeles National Forest.
Sure.
We have forests at our park at 44 acres.
But it's not contributing like the Amazon rainforest is to the oxygen of the world. Is that a fair statement? Not on that scale,
but it's definitely contributing, especially to Los Angeles.
So let's talk about that. Compare and contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So
you're the educator.
I'm the educator. Let me educate you right now.
All right.
All right.
Go for it.
So the Amazon rainforest, the statistic I recently read was it creates about 6% of our oxygen. And of course, it has immense, immense carbon trapping abilities. That's super, super important. We know that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, so it traps heat. And if there's an excess in it in the atmosphere, it's going to heat us up, which we know is an issue. But then here in Los Angeles, the Angeles National Forest, for example, it absorbs about 6.3 million metric tons, I was going to say, of carbon pollution. That's a lot in an already smoggy city, a very densely populated and a very hot city.
That's an astounding number.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't think I've ever heard that number before.
They're the lungs of our city.
They are.
The Amazon is the lungs of the planet, but we have the lungs of our city here in Los Angeles, and we got to take care of them.
But you know, in California, we have our fair share of fires, and they seem to be getting worse in recent years. And so, some of those are man-made. Some of those are caused by something as simple as a gardening tool, and maybe more sinister as a lighted match. But we have fires all the time here, and we lose trees all the time here. And then you repopulate those trees.
Right, which is extremely important. I like to say often, and I was just saying this earlier, that trees aren't here on accident. They don't exist on the planet just for us to harvest or just for us to chop down and develop and pave over. They're there to keep our ecosystem running. So we got to take care of them in turn, like they do for us.
Well, one of the things that's really caught my attention, of course, internet media, you know, big deal. You know, you see the pictures and everything else. But now you see the Leonardo DiCaprios. Now you see the J-Los, the celebrities weighing in. The G7 wanting to contribute to do something about the fires. This seems to be something that has captivated a lot of people in places other than Brazil, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And so there's this global phenomenon. It's like there is this attention being drawn to Brazil, and not just Brazil, but there's areas, you know, the Amazon covers several different countries.
It's in Peru.
Peru and Bolivia and Ecuador and Colombia. And so there's these, you know, fires that are Brazil's getting the attention, but it's really the Amazon that is the urgency right now. There is a lot of backing, and people are calling. People are calling us. What can we do? What are we doing? Emailing us constantly since this has blown up in the news.
All right, so if people are listening and they're interested in contacting you, tell them how to do that. How do you do that? How do you contact you?
All right, easiest way is treepeople.org. If you want to get directly involved, we have an events calendar on there so you can volunteer. You can come up for an educational tour with me and my colleagues. You can donate. You can visit our park and just absorb the ambiance. All of these things will be helpful, and we also have workshops. So private citizens, I should say, who want to become citizen foresters, but also for educators who want toolkits to try and bring more environmental literacy into their classroom. Yeah.
So follow us on all of our social medias, Tree People. Go to our website and you'll see our calendar of events where we have events every weekend.
You get a lot of people for this?
A lot of people. We have over 10,000 volunteers.
How many people come to those events?
We have over 12,000 people that come out. 10 to 12 per event. We're in the mountains, Santa Monica, the Angeles, and throughout all of LA. And we easily get anywhere from like 20 to 50 people on average who come out to our events. I do want to put in something that we are, drawing attention to the lungs of our city and our forests here. And we are, you know, as soon as planting season comes on board, which is, you know, going to be about mid-September to late September, depending on the raining season, we're going to start planting trees. And we want to plant thousands and thousands of trees here locally. So anyone willing to take that action and take that next step to care for our forest, our mountain forest, but also our urban forest, we hope to plant, you know, thousands. I'm talking about like up to 3,000.
And so you talked about 10,000. You talked about 10,000 people. Are those 10,000 people that basically donate? Or those people that are people who actually come out to events, actually plant trees, things like that? 10,000?
Yeah, that's the number of people who are actively digging holes on the ground, putting
10,000.
The shovel. 10,000, yeah. 10,000.
And then furthermore, our EcoTour program, which is our educational field trips for K-12, see over 10,000 kids a year, and we're trying to beat that number this year too.
Yeah. All right. Final thought about the Amazon fire. Start with you.
It's really a call to action. Really, we have to. There's a lot of feelings around it: anger, overwhelmness, sadness. But it's really our time to wake up and put take our shovels to the ground.
Cheyenne, you get the last word.
All right, what he said. And guys, if you're worried about it, start local. And we have the tools, and we have all the motivation for you. Come over, and we'll help you get this ball rolling.
Thanks for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and become part of the What the How family. See you next time.